Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast number 57. This week I am your host, Ben, and with me from delightfully warm and sunny Sweden is Colin. Say hello, Colin.
Hello.
Yeah, not with us this week is Alex, who had a family emergency and couldn't join us, so we hope that all is going okay there. So we actually took a bye week last week rather than do a podcast when the Sharks played a Saturday, Sunday, and then disappeared for 5 days. So we're kind of combining 2 weeks of action into one, hopefully not jumbo-sized podcast, no pun intended. It's the jumbo news of the week, though, was the Sharks cutting bait on one of their young guns at the AHL level, Nikolai Goldobin, who was traded unceremoniously early in the week to the Vancouver Canucks. And the response in the blogosphere for the Sharks and the response among fans has been pretty shrill, loud, disappointed. I don't know quite how to summarize it myself. What were your first thoughts when you heard about this trade, Colin?
Well, first, what's your reaction to the reaction that you just tried to describe?
Well, see, I was online at the time that the trade happened, and I'm kind of watching folks fly off the handle about Goldobin. And I'll admit, I don't like the trade as a pure hockey trade. But I don't want to spoil my more nuanced thoughts to beyond going further than that. I did see some folks kind of just, I don't even know if it's anger. It was interesting the amount an outpouring of vitriol for the trade, given the fact that Goldobin has played like, I don't know what, 10 games at the NHL level.
Yeah.
And so how did you feel when you first heard about the trade? You were probably asleep when it happened, right? So you probably woke up to the reaction.
Yeah, exactly. Which is actually kind of nice because you're not sitting there hitting refresh on a trade deadline. I don't like the trade, but as a Sharks fan, I've been conditioned to just want to hold on to every possible rookie potential that I have because they're always getting traded away for, you know, not a cup.
And right.
So whenever I see something that's flashy and shiny and new and has all this potential getting traded away for, you know, a guy who hasn't won a cup, you know, I don't like it. I have that gut reaction to not like it.
To build on that, right? We've had this happen a couple times in the past where young, good players have been traded away and turned into really nice, useful pieces. We think usually of Nick Bonino traded for garbage, more or less. and Charlie Coyle, who at least was part of the Brent Burns trade. Yeah. So at least you can say the Sharks maybe – probably, yeah, they got the better of that, roughly.
We had Havlat's contract for a while there.
True. Go ahead and finish your thoughts. I just wanted to provide that context to folks.
However, looking at this team going into the playoffs, it makes sense to me, and it could have been a hell of a lot worse. And I think we overpaid for the return.
Right.
But, I mean, especially the whole, if we win a cup, it turns into a first. You know, I like to have the hope that we will win a cup. And a first plus Goldie,
right?
I mean, no, that's way, way too much for Hansen. Right. However, we have needed a, you know, spark plug that can be defensively reliable in our bottom six. You know, we seem to be just adding Bodker types wherever we can. And so now we've got one for our bottom six. And
right.
Maybe this is the last thing we needed.
Yeah. My initial thought on the trade was was that we traded Goldobin for another Bodker. Because if you look at really just the underlying metrics, Bodker and Hansen are alike in the sense that they are guys who can score but don't push possession, or at least haven't shown a history of pushing possession, right?
Yep.
So they're either getting lucky or they've got a great shot. But we've seen with Bodker that he doesn't really fit into the Sharks system particularly well.
Over the last week, he's done pretty well.
Yeah, he does seem to finally be getting comfortable. That actually is worth talking about because he's had probably his two best pure shooting goals in the last three games, right? Both top corner snipes that looked great. But, you know, what we've seen with him is that I don't know, it was weird because when we first, we were opposed to the signing, but it happened. We were willing to give Bonker the benefit of the doubt. He hasn't had a great season. We thought that his ability to stretch the offensive zone would be good, but the Sharks kind of aren't built to take advantage of that, right? Pardon me for a second. Yeah. Sorry about that. Wow. Sorry, fans. But when outside of the underlying metrics, I don't think Hansen plays the same game that Bodker does. I think that Hansen's game is a little bit more a fit with the Sharks' cycle in the zone and maybe get that shot from the slot, but if not, then put it back to the defenseman and either shoot it back to the guy behind the net or try to put it on net or whatever, right? That classic DeBoer offensive setup. Yeah. So I feel like to some extent that Hansen is fine for what this team needs. I wanted to address something you said about a top six and bottom six. An interesting thing that somebody posted on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was one of the Montreal blogosphere dudes, said that if you're thinking of your team as a top six, bottom six, as opposed to top nine, bottom three, you're probably a lottery team. And I thought that was really interesting because I think in the modern era, I think that's right. I think we do need to start thinking about top nine at the very least. And we've talked about this in context of this team going to the cup final last year. Yeah. Honestly, you want to have four scoring lines, right? That's what makes Columbus go. That's what makes the Pens go. And ideally, this is a step towards that, right? As people get healthy, as Hansen comes in, the guy can score. He also can get hurt, and that's been a theme for the Sharks this year. So after my initial concerns about the Sharks were just adding another Bodker from the possession sense, I kind of sat back and I thought about the challenges this team has had in the playoffs historically, not last year, but historically, and the player mix that they're going for here.
I think you're going to name something, and I'm going to challenge what you – I think we had this problem last year too.
Okay. Well, what I was going to say is when the Sharks have had exits that they probably shouldn't have had, they had some players that were like Nikolai Goldobin in the NHL roster. Guys who have a lot of offensive flash and don't play a 200-foot game. Yeah. Now, and this is something that several of the commentators, including Ross McKeon, has kind of said about the trade, is that there were other prospects in the Sharks system who are willing to play a 200-foot game and seem to have passed Goldobin by on the depth chart, right? And that's fair. I think that's true. And I also think the Sharks are probably better off with a team full of committed 200-foot gamers, especially in DeBoer's system. My summary of this trade is the Sharks were never going – DeBoer, the Sharks under DeBoer were never going to give Goldobin enough time to settle into the NHL level and deploy a 200-foot game. So in that sense, if you're going to move him, and you're going to get a piece back that, I guess Hansen plays a 200-foot game. It doesn't show up in his possession metrics, but I suppose he does. And you've got another year of that guy. It's not a true rental. Then I can live with the trade because Goldobin was never going to get used. I guess my main concern is you should have been able to get more for a guy like Goldobin if he is what we think he is, right?
So I was wrong. I was expecting you to bring up the fact that when we've gone out in playoffs, or even when we've hit really rough spots where we pulled through, but it was more on puck luck than on actual, you know, depth or quality of system, was the sort of clench scoring, as we like to call it, that
right.
that the goal where you find no solutions to a particular problem. You can't do anything, and you either score or you take a loss and go into the next game really defeated.
Right.
We've had problems finding those goals at the bottom of the barrel.
Right.
And that to me is what Hansen brings. He's what Ward brought to us last year.
Sure. I think you're right, and I hope. What I guess I would add to that is, you know, I think, again, some of those players who have not been as defensively responsible have led the Sharks to give up some goals that they just simply couldn't get back in playoffs of the past, right? Yeah. And DeBoer's system is built around two things. First of all, keep that puck from getting to the net in any way possible, whether that means blocking a shot or having good
stick work
defensemen capable of moving the puck out of the zone quickly, transition to the offense, you know, all of those things together.
Yep.
And Goldobin just couldn't this year fit into that. Now, that said, by the way, I think one thing that guys like Ross McKeon say that Goldobin was passed by guys willing to play a 200-foot game, I think that's doing a disservice to what Goldobin has managed to do at the AHL level this year. I think that's unfair. I think Goldobin did everything that this organization has asked him to do in developing that, but he was slow to get it together. But, you know, not every player is capable of being Logan Couture, right?
The thing is, I think if you put Goldobin, like if you sent him to Toronto, I think he's skating on the second or first line in the next 1.5 seasons.
I think in Vancouver, he's skating on the second line tomorrow.
Right? But that's no offense to the Knuckleheads, but, you know, that's Vancouver.
But you know, when we talked about like what Goldobin could do at the NHL level, I think everybody in the fan base more or less said he needs to be on one of the top two lines to really get good use out of him, because like Bodker, he probably needs to be protected a little bit defensively. But also that's where he could use his creativity. And again, where I say that DeBoer was never going to give him the shot he deserved, there's just too many good players on this team for Goldobin to get a chance to play with Couture or with Jumbo when those other guys are 200-foot players who complement Pavs and Jumbo or Couture and, well, not counting Bodker because he's not – I mean, though, actually, to be honest, I've liked Bodker's defensive effort most of the year.
So I think the big thing is – We've seen that the door with DeBoer is still open. He's still trying different setups and trying different combinations of players and, you know, bringing up different guys to have a look. You know, we're seeing Goodrow come back and get another look and get another setup.
Yep.
I mean, this is exactly what we were worried we'd never see last season with DeBoer.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I think that's really fair, by the way. You know, he came in to our organization with that reputation from New Jersey that young guys would just never get a chance. And that's certainly not what we've seen. They've had to earn their chance, right? Yeah. And sometimes they've ended up heading back down to the AHL for some more seasoning, like poor Timo. But on the same token, like, I don't think that was necessarily the wrong call either. The Sharks have enough guys who are good enough at the AHL level that they can send Timo down to figure something out. They can send LeBanc down to figure something out. They can bring Sorensen up. They can bring Goodrow up and give them another chance. And you know, that's awesome, right? I mean, the Sharks have never really had that many young forwards ready to fill in that bottom three.
Fill in everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, we are a team with depth everywhere. Okay, maybe not goal. Though Dell has been stepping it up and he's been playing pretty well as well. Yeah. But, I mean, the thing that's really exciting is, you know, we're going to the playoffs. We are taking a run. Like, that is – those are two facts of this season.
Yeah.
And it's hard – it's easy to get lost in an 82-game season and sort of get – bogged down in the week-to-week fatigue.
Yeah.
And then forget, oh, wait a second, every guy who makes the roster in this season and impresses is going to get a shot at winning the cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys see this very real target online. I mean, Sorensen comes over the pond.
Right.
And he could win the cup in his first season of NHL.
Right. Yeah, what's interesting too is, you know, as things have come together this year, you know, when we started the year, the Sharks were struggling to score two goals a game, right? They couldn't get to three, let alone four or even five for a long time. But I feel like things have started to come together a bit especially with LeBanc settling in on the top line and getting like five assists in six games or something like that in
Real
the last
quick, though.
Few weeks. Yeah, go ahead.
So if we do win the cup, who does Hansen call first from the Canucks team that didn't?
Well, so, and actually I want to step back to something you noted there, right? So the trade was technically a fourth round conditional pick and Goldobin for Hansen. And as you said, if the Sharks win the cup, the condition is that moves into a first rounder. And that also pushed some of the commentary out over the edge, I felt like. And I'm kind of like, wait, but if we won the cup, it's going to be the 31st pick. So it's not going to be really a first round pick. It's basically a second.
Yeah, if we win the cup, everyone's going to look back.
Who's
and be like, what a brilliant trade. This was the perfect thing to do. Look how it brought everything together. Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Who's going to care?
I'll tell you who he calls. Bieksa. He calls Bieksa.
See, except thank God Bieksa is not on this team because he's
exactly
terrible.
But that's exactly why he calls Bieksa. Bieksa went to a California team. There was talks of him going to the Sharks.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
it's just that's who I think he calls.
Sure. I guess, you know, to talk about that momentum, the Sharks are definitely seem to be a team over the last month that have figured some things out, right, and are able to shuffle some guys in and out of the lineup when they need the answers to things, and that's encouraging, right? At the beginning of the year, they were a team that projected, I think, to get maybe 95 points. They're on a pace for 105 right now, using some of the, you know, the folks online who do the stats tracking. I'm thinking specifically of, let's see if I can find him. He updates every day. I think it's either Micah or maybe Dom.
So the thing that's interesting though is we're producing points and we're winning games and we're winning games convincingly. Yet when you sort of take any player from our, you know, top nine, none of them really stand out. Like we're not a team of statistical geniuses and superstars.
Right.
We're a team of okay, here, let me scroll down to, you know, 121st in Corsi. Oh, there's some of our guys.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about that is that I wouldn't say the scoring has been super balanced because you've got Burns kind of at the top of the list, and then Pavs and Jumbo somewhere just below, though Pavs first, right? By the way, Goldobin did get his first NHL goal yesterday for the Canucks. Or his first goal
him.
Of the season. So, yeah, good for him. I agree.
Good for him.
He's going to get a chance to play. I don't know where I saw this.
Here's my closing thought for Vancouver, you know, fan out there. Goldie is he. If you're a hockey fan old enough to remember Corky from the Sharks or any sort of, you know, fun dangler. You know, this isn't Pavel Bure, but, you know, this is a guy who loves having the puck and loves doing fun things with it and trying to score. You're going to have a lot of fun watching this guy. And so, you know, I think Sharks fans are bitter because we wished we could see him turn into the superstar he could be. And now, you know, we see that shipped off. So enjoy Vancouver.
Well, I mean, and that's interesting too. So I don't remember where I saw this, but there were some rumors that actually a Goldobin trade was attempted prior to the Vancouver one, and Goldobin said he wouldn't report. And I heard the rumor I saw was it was to Montreal, but he would agree to report to Vancouver because he would get a chance to play at the NHL level. So if that's true, you know, I get it. Like. I guess at the end of the day, like Goldobin wasn't going to get, again, he wasn't going to get the opportunity here that he deserved. Because DeBoer, he's not a DeBoer style player, right or wrong. It's just the way it is. And in that sense, I think Wilson did the right thing. Moved him for an asset. And if one of those things that got moved is a first at the end of the year, then we'll be too busy getting drunk on a Sharks cup victory to care. And if it's a fourth rounder plus Goldobin, it is an overpay. It is. I wish, you know, Goldobin brought more to us. And I hope that this doesn't turn out to be a Kent Huskins, Travis Moen for Nick Bonino and spare part trade. I hope that that's not true. I don't know that Hansen necessarily pushes this team from cup contender to cup finalist because it's Yannick Hansen. It's not like it's Matt Duchene or something who came back. But all that said, one thing we need to keep in mind is Goldobin might not be that great when it comes down to it.
He might just utterly fizzle out and be at best an AHL showboater. You know, absolutely. But then he'll go to the KHL and we'll be on anybody's books, so nobody cares.
Right.
But I think for us, for Hanson, Stanley Cups are either based on, you know, a team having a really good run and, you know, getting some, 10 or 30, you know, no-called hooks during their Stanley Cup run and just outplaying the final team.
Right.
But a lot of times it's those odd factors. You know, you have two teams who are sort of deadlocked, and then just that one random factor that gets the puck at the right time, you know, manages to score a goal.
Right.
Just upsets an entire series. So that's Hanson.
Yeah. Alex and I talked about this one of the weeks that you missed, that if you look at like the last 8 or 9 years of cup victories, it was more or less the best team in the league that won the cup. Going back to like 2008, right? It was the most complete, you know, not a team that just was offensively talented and defensively deficient, right? It's complete teams. It's Chicago. Yeah. It's LA. It's last year the Pens, right? Even though their defensive core looked vulnerable, they certainly weren't in the Sharks series for
but
various
reasons.
They had
a goalie who stood on his head. I mean
the Sharks did
magic.
Too. I mean, Martin Jones had a great playoffs. Yeah. I'm just saying that like it all has to come together. And again, the vulnerability in those earlier, the Sharks teams that were cup favorites, let's say, but fell apart when it mattered is, for whatever reason, they'd give up a killer goal. That was, there weren't, you know, 12 forwards all committed to a 200-foot game. And, you know, if that's what DeBoer, all of this is to say, look, DeBoer wouldn't play Goldobin. Doug had to do something with Goldobin. He got something back for it. It makes the team probably at the NHL level better because Yannick Hansen is a confirmed NHL player, whereas Goldobin, there are question marks, right? Can he survive that NHL game? And he wasn't going to get a chance to anyway.
Well,
so here we are, right? The NHL roster is stronger.
And faster.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I don't think Goldobin was slow, but yeah.
But he wasn't skating either.
I mean, he wasn't going to be given a chance, right?
Hanson is faster than pretty much anybody who would have skated in his place.
If he can stay healthy.
If he can stay healthy. Don't say that. Please don't say that.
It's something we have to worry about this year. I mean, especially on the defensive side, the Sharks have played rotating injury games all year, right? I mean, now Joachim Ryan is back up because Schlemko's hurt and DeMello is just rounding back into form after his broken wrist. So, you know.
Yeah, that was a bad break too.
But was it? Yeah, it was.
What's great is we're absorbing these penalties.
Yeah.
Or these injuries. Like one season ago, five seasons ago, this would have been season over. It'd have been like, we're going to basically inertia our way into the playoffs. But, you know, there's no way we're going past the first round with all these injuries. Now it's just sort of like, you know, get the spare part, slap it in there, let's keep going. And it's great. Like, I love it, but it's also weird.
Yeah, and actually, one other thing that actually just came up in our chat that is worth pointing out is, you know, some other guys did move around the league who might have been more useful to the Sharks and cost less than Goldobin, for example, though they are true rentals. And that's, again, an advantage with the Hanson thing is if he comes in and he's healthy, he's signed another year, right? If he's the next second coming of Joel Ward, then that's good because he's signed for another year. He's younger than Ward, too, significantly. I mean, he is 30, so he's not young, but that's all a fair point. For example, P.A. Parenteau moved for a sixth. Again, that guy who seems to score pretty well moved for basically nothing, which of course leads to questions like, is what kind of locker room guy is he that he is constantly movable for such low return, right? Like, what's the real problem there? And we talked, you know, there were other guys. Thomas Vanek was another guy that people, I think, wanted the Sharks to take a flyer on, but he had the same problem that Goldobin does, which is, he's a complete defensive liability, whereas, again, I think Goldobin made progress this year.
Yeah, and he said it in his ways too. I just
and DeBoer would not have known what to do with him, right? What made him successful where he signed this year to be able to be moved is the coach, you know, put him on the fourth line and then gave him power play time, right? So more or less like sheltering him, sheltering his defensive weaknesses and emphasizing his positives. Probably so they could get a return for him at the deadline. Similar thing that they're doing with Gagne in Columbus. DeBoer's not going to do that. DeBoer wants his fourth line to play a 200-foot game. So.
Yep, and I guess he's sick of having the Brown minutes on people too.
So, you know, any other thoughts on Goldobin for Hansen? I mean, good luck to the guy is what I have to say, because again, I feel like everything the organization asked him to do, he just was a little slow getting it all together. And DeBoer, something he did soured him with DeBoer.
I mean, I hope Goldie just does wonderful things for Vancouver and then, you know, nets them a really great trade to the Eastern Conference.
Well, I'm torn on that, right? Because personally, I would like him to do very, very well.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to look like the Bonino Huskins Moen trade down the roads.
But that's the thing is, I would be perfectly happy to see Goldie traded to like the Islanders. You know, then he could just blow up scoring on the East Coast for a team that you know five people in a duck care about.
Yeah. Definitely. All right. So that's our thoughts on the Goldobin for Hansen trade. It's an overpay, but makes sense. And Wilson probably needed to do something with that to get something for him now. And again, you know, Hansen is with us till next year. I guess he has to be protected in the expansion draft as well, which is a little bit of a bummer. So the Sharks are going to lose something.
That's ugly. And the expansion draft could really hurt us. Are we going to see Hansen play tonight?
You know, I haven't heard for sure, to be honest, because he's had some immigration issues. Goldobin had some too, but obviously got into the Canucks lineup earlier. I'm not even sure Hansen has practiced with the team yet. I haven't seen anything about that. They practiced yesterday or in the morning and then flew east. So I don't think so. But I don't think he needs to play yet. I think, again, like the Sharks are not hurting for forward bodies. They're just they may be hurting for defensive
bodies. The sooner the better to see if
he
adds value there immediately or if there's some work to do.
Well, there's a big question, too, that comes out of this, right? Which is, all right, so Donskoy is getting healthy, and you've got Hansen coming in, who isn't, you know, they're not going to move him to the AHL. He's going to play, right?
Yeah.
So what two bodies move out of the lineup, starting with Hansen and Donskoy being healthy?
Well, I very much want to see Haley sit.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know, we say that, but it's time for me to acknowledge that, you know, Haley's fourth line has been playing pretty well.
Yeah.
But and he's been playing all right.
Yeah.
I feel dirty saying it, but I agree. I think that, you know, if this team is firing all cylinders, the first forward to sit is Michael Haley, or should be.
You know what really sort of cuts me to say this, but I'd say Haley and Tierney. You got Sorensen as well that we could sit. So
yeah. I mean, you could say Sorensen, but he's brought a real good burst of speed and skill in the last couple of games.
It'd be Haley and Tierney.
I would not mind seeing Chris Tierney sit. He is, in some sense, the possession black hole that is unneeded.
Yeah,
I hate to say that because he's gotten plenty of opportunities to be more than he is at this point.
And so I didn't think we were going to get to this topic, but we've come right around to it. Has he peaked?
Well, no. I mean, no, you know, these guys don't physically peak until they're 24 or 25, right? And Tierney is, what, 22, 23?
Yep.
But have we seen what he is capable of more or less? I mean, I think so. Like, I don't think he's going to suddenly blossom into Logan Couture, right? Who by 22 or 23 was scoring well more than he was and was pushing possession. you know, we need to think about like who plays center on the fourth line if Tierney is sitting. And that's the thing, like they've been going into games with basically Haley taking draws and some random dude, whoever is thrown on it, taking draws as well, right? So I don't really know that it matters too much, especially since the Sharks are succeeding despite being terrible at faceoffs. Yep. By the way, that's because faceoffs are just a single puck battle and you just go win the next one. So I don't know. I'd be happy with anybody at center on the fourth line, more or less. Because what it's going to be is, you know, Jumbo, Kocher, Hurdle down the middle, and your fourth line center is whoever you want to take draws when you put the fourth line out. So I'm not, you know, Tierney isn't the future of the Sharks in any way, shape, or form at this point. So I'd be happier seeing maybe one of those C's from the AHL get up and start taking fourth line draws. But you know, I feel like we're gonna have to wait till next year for that. So if it's some combination of Carlson, Ward, I mean, Ward takes draws too, right? So when he drops to the fourth line, then he can take those draws too. That's fine.
Indeed. I think we're spoiled for choice. I think it's great that we've seen scoring coming from so many different names. This week has been all about us seeing goals from different players from different locations and from different plays. Yep. And it's great. It's just a week before, 2 weeks before, we're sitting there worrying because we're the one-trick burn show.
Right.
And here we are with, you know, lots of players stepping up. We're having Bodker score the exact goal we were, you know, kind of expecting him to come in and score every five games.
Right. Well, I mean, bearing in mind that we've been playing the dregs over the last couple
of
weeks.
Yeah, that's the real downside.
Arizona, Vancouver, Toronto's not great. The Bruins are great. I mean, they're top of the heap possession-wise, though they were very deeply unlucky before their coach got canned.
Minnesota tonight. I mean,
that's the thing, right? Yeah. Exactly. Today's matchup with Minnesota, another lucky team, a team that has been lucky both on the shooting percentage and goaltending side, is going to be a real test of where this team is, right?
And so, you know, this is why I want to see Hansen in. If he comes into this situation with a team, like a shutdown team that is currently sitting top of points and has, you know, been able to put up these great numbers on both sides, does Hansen sort of help us over that hump?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question. I mean, he should to some extent. Again, you know, he's pretty good scoring-wise. So we'll see. I mean, though he peaked obviously a couple years ago, he's still probably better right now than Meyer or Sorensen or Ward or what have you. I mean, I guess we'll see. Ward's actually one of those guys who has woken up since the early part of the season, and that's been good and gratifying to see because they need him to be contributing to the scoring.
Well, it adds those random goal players, those, you know, where did that come from? Ward deking half the freaking Predators and making Pekka Rinne look like a fool.
I mean, right.
These goals come out of nowhere. They're the Stanley Cup, you know, run moments that we all love. And Hansen is a guy who could bring that. And he can bring it from a good defensive play on our end, which is something Goldie, you know, really wasn't there for.
Yeah. I mean, the secondary scoring thing you bring up is what's going to either keep the Sharks alive through the playoffs or not, right? Because as we've seen many, many times, as good as Jumbo, Pavs, and their, you know, partner du jour is, when you get into the playoffs, you're often matching top line versus top line, and they often neutralize each other, right? Yep. So what drove the Sharks' success last year in the playoffs was that their third and fourth lines were better than other teams' third and fourth lines in the playoffs, right? And so those guys can capitalize. So if the Sharks really do need to put together that top nine and that bottom three, that gives them an advantage. And actually, again, this is something that Haley has been doing remarkably well with his fourth line and his companions, is that they have been better than other teams' fourth lines except the Bruins, right? So
interesting.
So another probably another test of that is going to be against Minnesota, which is, you know, here's the thing. So once the playoffs start, I'm not afraid of Minnesota. I'm going to just say that right now because they're a Boudreaux coach team and it's going to implode at some point, right? They'll get bad goaltending for a stretch or their shooting percentage will go away as teams play tighter checking hockey. Yep. And just like his Ducks and just like his Caps team, they're going to flame out spectacularly. And that's the way it is.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll say it now. Like, they're a first round exit waiting to happen because they have largely succeeded on percentages this year.
Yeah, heard it here first, folks.
So, of course, this means that the Sharks are going to meet the Wild in the Western Conference final, and then I'm going to be like drinking heavily the whole time.
Well, then you're just going to be explaining how they met a bunch of chumps before and puck luck and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, you'll be long-term lovers with a bucket of chum.
I'm not saying that they're a bad team, by the way. They're not. And Boudreaux is awesome. He's a great coach. He gets these, his system gets the offense rolling from all four lines, but I don't know if it's a personality quirk of his or what, but his teams do seem awfully susceptible to the incredible flameout, don't they? In the same sense that McClellan's teams had those problems, right? What we always talked about with McClellan is he never seemed to have an answer when the team started to clench.
True.
And whether that was the players and not having, you know, the right 12 forwards and the right six defensemen playing a consistent model game or what, I mean, it's the truth.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking about having answers or having no answers, we could talk about some teams with no answers and start with Vancouver.
All right. So let's briefly talk about each of the games over the last couple of weeks. Actually, let's start with the Arizona game because the Sharks finally overcame that weird thing where they have trouble with Arizona, who I refuse to call the DDs because it's the worst thing ever. And Randy Hahn needs to stop it. But they are bad. Wow, are they bad.
He calls them the Desert Dogs.
Desert Dogs, yeah. And so this game had, you know, speaking of, again, like I was saying, the fourth line kind of really chipping in. That was what this game was our fourth line was probably better than their third and second lines, right? Carlson gets a goal. Burns gets a goal with them on the ice. Haley gets a goal, for God's sake, right?
2 points.
And then the Sharks steal it out at the end with a power play goal from Burns. To step back and say again, like the Sharks seem to be on an upswing.
Yeah.
They dominated possession in four of the games we're talking about.
Yeah, and I mean, we dominated possession with, you know, tempo and with different shooting opportunities coming from different, you know, prime locations. You know, we weren't a one-trick pony. We weren't the, you know, Brett Burns show. And I'm really scared we go into the playoffs, we meet a high-resistance team, and we just turn into the Brett Burns show, which quickly turns into the, you know, random defensive skater breaks away towards Jones show. So I love seeing so many different looks coming from our team.
Yeah, I think they do still have the tendency, let's say, to try to get the puck back to Burns primarily. But, you know, what we need to see is we need to see them scoring in those other ways, as you mentioned. You know, the good thing about the fourth line is they're built around forechecking. They're built around trying to maintain the puck, but not necessarily cycle it. But also, you know, like scrum for the puck and come out of it and get the puck to whoever is open for a shot. Sorensen's goal with Hurdle and I forget who was on the ice with them was a good example of that play, right? Sorensen and Hurdle both went to the net, which is, you know, great. And Hurdle, it looked like he passed it, but actually I think he whiffed on a shot and it just happened to get to Sorensen, who took it off his skate, put it on his stick and got it past the aging wonder Ryan Miller. So,
well, between the defender's legs,
true.
Pad, and I mean, you a lot of times you'd argue that the shooter just sort of fanned it towards the net and got a lucky line, Whereas when you watch, Sorensen aimed this.
Yeah, like, he did.
See him sort of drop down, find the hole, and just sort of bank the puck in.
Right.
So, I mean, that is some poise being in, this is what, his third game in the NHL?
Third or fourth, yeah, I think.
And having his best scoring opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, hands down, the best he's ever had in the league. Yeah.
Oh, he played two really good games. Let's.
Oh yeah,
all told.
But I mean, to just keep his head and to, you know, find that tiny little gap and just make sure it goes in just right. You know, good things there, I think.
Yeah. It bodes well. I mean, again, we've seen a lot of guys come up and have a good game and then kind of not necessarily follow up with. You know, consistency, let's say. And so it's just something we're going to have to keep an eye on. The Bruins game. Bruins game was close on the scoreboard. It was a tight affair. I thought it was one of the better played games the Sharks actually played this year, to be honest. What did you think? You know, besides taking an OT and losing.
Yeah, well, I mean, losing an OT is, those are the scary moments, because I see playoff games, playoff hockey is like being in OT the whole time. You know, every goal could be the last you'll ever see. And, you know, teams play like it's on the line. They play defensively and they finish their plays. And I mean, it's great hockey. But when you lose an OT in regular season, that worries me, because that's the get serious and get it done time.
I mean, except it's 3-on-3, so it's not even really hockey at that point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about, and this is something Roenick said at the end of the game, and I just immediately was like, no, that's not right. He called this an impressive win by the Bruins. And my perspective is, it was an impressive game by both teams, I thought. The Sharks actually outpossessed the Bruins in this game. And when you get to OT, it's just a way of ending the game before people die of exhaustion in the regular season. So,
yes,
you know, whether, and I like 3-on-3 compared to the shootout, don't get me wrong, but it's not an impressive win if you win in 3-on-3, because it's not even really hockey. I'm sorry, it's just not. It's good that you came away with an extra point. That's how I sort of feel about that.
I still feel like you need to be able to get it done in any sort of pressure situation. And these are the last, you know, these are the last 2 months before playoffs, where you kind of need to start buckling down on those and treating those like practice.
Sure. Except once the playoffs start, you're not going to sniff 3-on-3. So who cares?
Yeah. True. But I mean, just in general hitting.
Yeah. Overtime. I mean, I hear you in some sense, but you know, it's the second game in a back-to-back. So the Sharks are already, in theory, at a disadvantage, right? And I don't know if Boston was playing on a back-to-back there or not. But, you know, it's the Sharks to take this game to OT, I think, is fine. And to outpossess and outshoot the Bruins, a strong Bruins team that I think, again, has been unlucky this year, doesn't bode poorly for this team's chances in the playoffs. In fact, to some extent, I think it bodes well, because they played such a strong, structured game for the majority of it, and Jones played well.
Yeah.
And then so you lose it when you got only three guys on the ice, and it was an embarrassing way to lose it, because I think it was Marchand who caught that breakaway pass that nobody seemed to expect and everybody should have expected, and gets it by Jones. So it is what it is. But you know, you got to OT, and in the playoffs, that's 5-on-5, and you continue to grind, and I think the Sharks had an advantage in a game like that if it had gone that way.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't take too much out of losing 3-on-3 and losing on a fluke sort of brain fart. I mean, I guess in the sense that, you know, the Sharks have to avoid those brain farts at every opportunity in the playoffs to succeed. I'd agree with you there, but 3-on-3 is, I don't know, it's kind of a joke to me. It's just not as much of a joke as the shootout is. The shootout is a true joke.
All right.
I don't know. That's how I feel about it. Then the Sharks went to took 5 days off, and then they played the Canucks at the Canucks and embarrassed them 4-1, which was great. Though they did not outpossess the Canucks in this game, they did outscore them. So what did you think about this one?
Well, I mean, how can you not love a game where you have the Sharks going from multiple angles, multiple players? You have Bodker doing his...
Bodker's sweet shot, yep.
Well, it's not even a sweet shot so much as his just blitzing down the wing, yep, and letting it go on the rush. I mean, that was sort of the goal I was expecting him to come in and do all the time.
Right. Those were the shots he was missing wide of net and over the net.
Yep.
You know, 2 months ago. And then we get two this week where he actually managed to put it where he wanted it to go, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's great. And unfortunately, it wasn't against a team who we can be like, yeah, you know, can't wait to see them in the playoffs. But a win's a win. And getting this confidence and getting that, you know, feel for more of our shooters is outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, and Hurdle had himself a strong game playing wing with Tierney at center and Ward on the other wing. Tierney had a couple of assists in this game, but again, like I don't think Tierney's terrible. I'm not sure he's, you know, top.
Got much more to.
I'm not sure he's in the top 12 forwards the Sharks can ice right now.
Yeah,
not sure. You know, it sounds like you agree on that. And then again, they got to play a back to back coming out of this. And so after playing Vancouver,
we get to go play Austin Matthews.
Oh, I guess it wasn't back-to-back. Sorry. No, they took another 2 or 3 days off and then went to play. Yeah, the Leafs came into town. Now, you and I were at a Leafs game last
year
in February that was pretty entertaining. And yeah. I thought this game was pretty entertaining, too. What'd you think?
I have to give Alex his moment of happiness and say that Marlowe had an outstanding assist.
Yeah, he did.
Assist where he absolutely made the entire play that allowed Hurdle to score.
Yep. Though Hurdle's shot obviously plays a part of that.
Yes. Hurdle made an outstanding shot, so Marlowe doesn't get his great play if Hurdle doesn't make that shot. And where has this Marlowe been for, you know, the last three seasons?
Right. Well, I thought he had a pretty strong
he had few a great games. Week. Yeah, he had a great week. He's been stepping up on his, you know, assist play and his play at making other people better. I hope we see more of this in the playoffs.
Yeah, so me too, because I mean this was one of the more complete games that the Sharks have played this year, I thought. This young Maple Leafs team got outplayed. They got out hustled.
Yeah. Yeah.
The three guys who followed Marlowe to the boards on that play reminded me of the four Sabres that followed Jumbo in that one great screenshot from a couple years ago. Jones looked good, honestly, the Sharks played against a goalie who I thought had a pretty good game too, despite, you know, losing to the Sharks 3-1. I mean, nobody stops Hurdle's shot, right? Mm. Dylan had a perfect setup by LeBanc on his goal. And
he nails the shot.
And he nailed the shot. Yeah.
So much trouble finding the lane with his shots.
Yep.
That it's great when he does, because we're stuck with him. We've admitted this. Yep. So it's great to see him actually doing those things that people keep telling us he's able to do.
Yeah, he went far side with Anderson sliding to his side. Yep. Which was the only place that puck was going to go in. So it was a great shot. It only happens, though, because LeBanc cleared all that space and got that puck into him.
So, I mean, we'll get there when we talk stars, if we're doing stars.
Okay.
LeBanc has had one of the best quiet couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting on the scoring sheet, but he's getting on in assists, and he's getting on in secondary assists.
Yep.
But his end-to-end ice play has been outstanding.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
He's been great.
Yeah, he's been. I agree. He's been quiet because he doesn't look particularly impactful during the games, and I'm not sure if that means he's not or he is. With LeBanc, I've been kind of expecting the second coming of Pavelski.
Yeah.
And he's just not quite there yet from the shooting perspective, from being in shooting spots perspective. But he, you know, he's definitely playing a strong game along the boards and helping that first line maintain possession. I would like to see him put a couple goals away, I think, in the next week or so, to really feel like he's hasn't hit that rookie wall, you know?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the last game this week, which was a rematch with the abysmal Vancouver Canucks, and a natural place for Aaron Dell to show off his brand new delicious headwear.
God.
It is delicious on the back of it, by the way.
Oh, God. But you had to repeat it. Did Alex pay you?
No.
Did he pay you to repeat that?
No, it was delicious.
Wow.
So this was another, I thought, like, really strong all-around game. This one, the Sharks did outpossess Vancouver significantly. Outplayed them in all zones, I thought, significantly. This was after, you know, the announcement of the trade as well. So they knew they would be getting Goldobin shortly to shore up their lineup. And they had no Yannick Hansen, who may have been the difference maker. No, he wouldn't have been the difference maker in this game. But I don't think Ryan Miller himself, by the way, had a particularly poor game here.
No.
In giving up three goals to the Sharks.
I mean, look at the goals.
Yeah. Nobody stops Bodkers. That was just a beautifully placed goal.
Yep.
So he was maybe kind of put out of position on going for hurdles with Sorensen, then poked it through him. So, but I don't blame Miller for that.
But you had 1.5 skaters between you and the puck.
Yeah.
You know, like, so who's to know?
Yes, that's fair too. And then, you know, Couture's shot was
glorious.
Glorious too, right? So this is one of those games where I felt like unfortunately it was against a bad opponent, but if it had been against somebody who was pretty good, I would have been like, oh man, the Sharks really are rounding into form, right? Because they played a goalie who was having a pretty good night and still found ways to score. So again, I feel like if we got this sort of outcome against Minnesota, that would be like, oh man, okay, this team has started to put it together, right?
Well, we've got it in, what, 3 short hours?
Yeah.
I'm just happy I get to see a game live.
Yeah, what time does that start for you?
Midnight.
You going to be up with the baby?
I will be up. We will see if the baby chooses to join.
Yeah.
But she loves hockey.
Yeah. So I guess all told, the Sharks won 4 and got a point in OT against the Bruins, and they've continued to maintain that lead in the Pacific, which is looking better and better every time the Sharks gain points, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, is it a lead when no one else is racing?
Well, here's what's great right now, right? The Sharks are still have 2 games in hand over most of the Pacific, one against the others, right? They've got a 5-point lead over the Oilers with 2 games in hand on them. They've got a, what is this, 7-point lead over the Ducks with a game in hand. They're clearly the class of the Pacific from a goal differential perspective, right? Though the Oilers are looking all right. I'm not going to bang on them too bad. The Flames are still bad, but somehow have won 6 in a row, which really just bodes poorly for the Kings, to be honest.
Look at the last, 4 seasons? Calgary just, like, they've got some voodoo ritual they do around this time of year every year, and something happens.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's sustainable or not, and the Sharks right now I think would end up matching up against them in the first round, and I'd bite my fingernails over that, because an undisciplined, unstructured, fast team tends to give the Sharks fits, because the Sharks are like, wait, what are you doing? That's not how you play hockey, and then the goal's in the net.
But on the other hand, think of what it could be for just our, you know, quick 4-game warm-up, just beat down on some other team.
Let's hope. I certainly hope the Sharks would do. I'm not necessarily ready to suggest that that's exactly how things will go.
So the interesting, you just need those early 2000s Detroit Red Wings to springboard your way to the cup.
The other narrative thing that I think is funny and worth noting here, by the way, is that the two teams in the wild card hunt right now are both from the Pacific, not the Central, which is supposedly so much better than the Pacific. And you know, LA is basically fighting with St. Louis for that spot, right? And St. Louis actually has a couple games in hand on them, but they have lost five in a row. That's going to hurt your chances at the playoffs.
And where did Shattenkirk go again?
Oh, God, the Caps. The Caps are scary now.
Did they get back? Oh, yeah.
Some picks, I think. Did they get a player back? Actually, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Blues are looking like they're sort of closing shop.
Yeah, maybe. So it's Winnipeg, St. Louis, L.A., and Calgary fighting for those wild card spots. And Calgary's got a six-point lead on L.A. right now, right? With that winning streak, of that six-game winning streak. So if I'm St. Louis, Winnipeg, or L.A., I'm pretty concerned right now. And L.A.'s big deadline, you know, talking about the Sharks and us being a little bit annoyed to give up Goldobin for, you know, somebody who is probably a top nine player, but just at the fringes, right? At least we didn't think that our solution was Jerome Iginla.
Well, I mean,
do you disagree?
The jersey. I mean, we could have Iginla jerseys.
Sure. I'd love to wear the jersey of a guy who would hopefully be in the Sharks press box every night.
Hopefully. I don't know. I've got a soft spot for Iginla. I don't know why. I think because he basically was the guy who picked the black card out of the barrel. It was just told, okay, yeah, you got to go keep Calgary relevant for a decade or more. Have fun. Sure.
On the same token, though, I mean, this is a guy who's let his agent first sign him to Colorado, which was an obvious tire fire, right? And not going to make the playoffs and not going to get very far if they did. And then where does he kind of agree to a trade to? Is LA, a team that is barely in the playoff race right now, despite being, again, thanks to the system they run, really, really good in possession, right? I mean, they could, if they make the playoffs, all they have to do is get good goalie play and play structured and not have injuries to be really dangerous. I mean, let's be fair. I mean, I'm making fun of them for being, you know, almost out of the playoff picture, and yet I sure as hell would, again, be biting my fingernails if the Sharks ended up playing them in the first round.
I would too, but that's just because LA does that stranglehold playoff play so well. It's
totally
terrible.
Totally. And I'll say again, like, yes, the Sharks beat them in, what was it, five games last year or six games? Yep. I can't remember.
Five.
But that was a team playing without one of its top four defensemen, right? That series could have been very different if they were healthy. And thank goodness they weren't, because they were definitely the best team the Sharks played in the Western Conference.
This is true.
sorry, St. Louis and Nashville.
Best team.
Nashville was probably better.
Yeah, the Nashville series was outstanding.
It was a great series. So let's look ahead briefly, and then we'll do our three stars to wrap this puppy up.
We're playing Minnesota. I think that's all that we really need to say. I would love.
Well, we do. Yep. We've got Minnesota tonight or afternoon. We've got Winnipeg. Speaking of teams that are threatening for a playoff spot, of course we have to play them as a part of a back to back. So I'm assuming we'll see Delicious tomorrow. We better. Then we take 3 days off, and we face Washington, another real big test.
Yeah.
Thursday, and before our podcast on Friday. So, interesting week, right? Three teams that are in playoff pictures, as opposed to our last week where we played one in playoff pictures, and we'll see where we are. So
I think we're going to be pretty good.
I hope so. We'll know pretty soon here against Minnesota. Washington will be a heck of a test.
Yeah, that game is going to be great. I love that, you know, in my socialist nightmare existence, I'm looking down the barrel of 18 days off. So I get to be naughty and watch some live hockey games.
Nice. That's awesome. All right, so you wanted, it sounds like you do want to do your three stars of the week, so let's go ahead
Oh,
and
I
do
mean,
that.
it's the Wild West when you're hosting, so who knows what we're doing.
Exactly. I don't hew to conventions or
Whoa.
structures.
It's a little early in your life for day drinking, buddy. So yeah, first third star for me is LeBanc. I think he has shown that you don't need to be, putting up goals every game to really sort of make an impact and make a difference and, stay within DeBoer's good graces. You just need to be that 200-foot player we've been talking about. You need to be on point and create good opportunities for the team, which he's been doing. He just hasn't been, getting those goals. I very much like it more when he is scoring goals, but, he's doing really well. My second star is going to have to go to Bodker.
All right.
I mean, he's, dare we say, he is, activated finally.
Heating up. Yeah, he is seventh on the Sharks in scoring now.
I mean, activated is all I want. I want to see more looks of what we saw this week from him more consistently.
Here's the thing that I'm not quite ready yet to say that Bodker is what we hoped he would be. Joel Ward has four more points than he does, and Mark Edwards Lasic has simply one fewer point than Bodker does in four fewer games. So I think that, I mean, Bodker's challenge has been getting shots on net, just period, right? And he's got to get more shots on net. That it's pure and simple. And when he's been playing better, he has been, right? I mean, look at it this way. Paul Martin has one fewer point than Michael Bodker as well.
Ouch.
Paul Martin.
Yeah,
Hold on.
ouch.
Paul Martin. So
Thank you.
anyway, but I agree with you. I agree with your assessment in terms of the last week. So I just wanted to
Yeah.
be mean. Go ahead.
Fish gotta swim. And so to go against the convention of Ben
Oh.
and I being mean and bitter about everything, my first star goes to Marlowe.
All right. Wow. So you don't hate him anymore?
I still hate his contract.
Fair.
I still pull out my, only Sharks jersey, which is Marlowe, and wear it proudly. I just would like to see him put up the play we've seen proof of him now able to do. I want to see him play like that in the regular season because I don't have the faith that it's just going to magically turn on and stay on in the playoffs.
I mean, it's pretty remarkable. Let's just say it that we've got two 37-year-olds on this team who are scoring better than half a point per game, right? At 37. If we were getting 40 or 37 points from, let's say, Bodker or LeBanc or Hurdle, God rest his injured soul, we'd be pretty darned happy with that. Right, I mean, Hurdle's given us better than half a point per game as well, but he was injured for half the season, so he would have gotten there if he weren't Sir has no knee cartilage. But like, that's the real challenge, and that's why Marlowe has value, is that we don't have young guys who are scoring when put in these positions at the rate that either Jumbo or Marlowe can still somehow do at that age. Joel Ward, 35 or 36 now, has 25 points, right? And Bodker hasn't matched that. And LeBanc's not there yet, et cetera. So that's, again, to take this all the way back to our first discussion of why trade Goldobin, well, it's because, Hansen maybe has a chance on this team to actually score 40 points in a full season with us, if he's not hurt, right? And Goldobin wouldn't have been given the opportunities, been put in the positions to do that. As good as the young guys are here, none of them are proven to be nearly as good as some of those oldsters, right? So, my stars of the week, I'm gonna go with third star. I'm gonna go with the one, the only, the illustrious Michael Haley for scoring his first goal of the season.
Oh,
but also whiffing on his second in the next game.
So
the Bruins.
You know how I was telling you in chat earlier how it bugs me that I can find stats that I like about Haley?
Yep.
He is one of the least scored against players we have.
Yeah. Yeah. So with the line mates he's been given over the last month or so, he is driving possession. He is keeping teams hemmed in when it's fourth line on fourth line, right? He's providing a fourth line. His line is providing an advantage against other fourth lines. And so if I'm going to bag on him earlier in the year for being a possession anchor in those fourth line on fourth line matchups, I have to give credit where things turn around. And, you know, you never really are sure who is a possession anchor when you've got a line that plays together a lot, right?
Yeah.
We assume it's Haley because his main skill set is that he's willing to put his knuckles in another guy's teeth.
Yeah.
Whereas it's probably fair to say that the blame could go around when you've got Tierney and Haley on the line together, right?
Yeah.
Neither of them is great. But matched with other with Carlson, who is an extraordinary bottom three player. Like, most teams, I think, would kill to have a player like Carlson. Hell, maybe I should be giving Carlson this third star of the week as I think about it.
Carlson is outstanding. And he's
outstanding. I mean, he provides so much value to that line.
And he's been the sewer maintenance of our team for, like, two seasons now.
Right, right, exactly. And he does everything that DeBoer asks him to do, right?
Yeah.
This is a guy who was at his best when he was on the training wheels line, but is willing to sacrifice his scoring to be a great fourth line plug. So, you know, God bless you, Melker Carlson.
Yeah.
So if I could give it to the whole fourth line, I would. They've been playing excellent together. My second star of the week, I'm going to agree with you and go to Bodker for what he's shown. And I hope that he's building confidence and going to continue to put pucks on net. And not so much where he still frustrates me is when he gets lost along the sideboards and doesn't pass the puck back into the cycle and then just gives it up. And we're still seeing him do that way too often. And I don't know how you solve that problem. Because what he wants to do is he wants to drive into the middle or maybe distribute to the defensemen. But they're covered because, of course, they're covered. It's the Sharks. You can't let Burns or anybody on our point have that puck uncontested, especially – anyway, first star of the week, I'm going to give to Burns because he has now tied his goal total of last season in game 63 and is like third in the league in scoring overall and distributed assists this week as well as scoring goals. So
Burns had one outstanding defensive play. I think it was against Boston where there was a loose puck in the crease.
Yeah.
And he, you know, kicks it to one foot, kicks it up from that foot to his stick and clears it. Just one crisp, fluid motion.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly the sort of quick stick work you're looking for Martin or Vlasic or Slemko to do.
Right.
And it was the perfect play.
Yeah.
And, I
should have accounted for this. By contrast, he made one of the worst defensive plays I've ever seen this week, too. When he went for the body on...
Matthews.
Yes, and that led to their single goal.
Yeah.
That was bad. That was a bad decision, Brent Burns, and you should feel
that. Embarrassing.
But I still love you, Brent Burns, because we'd have to think about what this team looks like without Brent Burns. I mean, leading the team in scoring by 12 points, being third in the league in scoring or whatever he's at. He probably is more like fourth or fifth today.
I guess 2008 would be the answer.
Oof. I mean, you know, talking about the team struggling to score two goals, they would have been struggling to score one goal without Burns earlier in the year. This would be a bad team. All right, so we've got our stars. We've covered the games we're going to see next week. This is your chance for a last thought from Sweden. Go for it, Colin.
There's not much to say that we haven't already covered at least three times tonight.
We've gone a little long, so we should just wrap it up. So I'm Ben.
Yes.
Colin.
I'll say, despite rumors to the contrary, the worst thing that happened last week is I went to a Japanese spa and I had a great time.
Yeah, that's why you missed our podcast recording spot, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And forced us to have a bye week, you jerk. Well, anyway.
Yeah. Terrible things happening in Sweden.
Oh, I hear. Yeah, totally. All right. So yeah, I'm Ben. He's Colin. We're done for the week. Go Sharks. We'll see you next. Hopefully we'll see you on Friday this time at our normal recording spot.
Yep.
Peace out.